Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Cricket Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Welcome to another week of the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. Hold your tears, everyone, because we do have some bad news or good news. This is the last show for the season.
Boo.
There's going to be a little break over... There's going to be a little break over the Christmas period or the New Year's period. I think David and myself, we deserve a well-earned break and we can kick back and relax and eat a few roast turkeys or whatever. Yeah. Got any plans, David?
I'm having Christmas at home this year, so yeah, we're having a break from the podcast. So if you are a fan, apologies. If you hate us while you're listening, but you'll be very relieved to know that we won't be back for a couple of months while we have our Christmas break. So yep, Christmas at home this year. What about you, Kev?
Yeah, I'll be having it at home as well. Probably go out during the New Year's break to a few other local areas around the country.
Yeah.
And maybe just holiday it up.
Yeah.
Because I have a break from my cricket as well.
Yeah, that's the thing to do, isn't it? Have a good time over Christmas and let your hair down a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
You had the second part of your game that you'd already lost this week.
Yes, that's right. We got bowled out for 115 again. It wasn't a great thing, but it was an improvement from our 42 last week.
Yeah.
But I think just got to keep our heads up. We were, I think, a bit too complacent. We played a few weaker teams and we thought, this team can't be too hard, but they obviously got ahead of us and we just got to keep our head up. But yeah, everything's a learning experience.
Yeah, I mean, everyone loses a game from time to time. Our last season, we were riding high at the top of our league and we looked like it was going to be a season where we'd win the league easily. We're thrashing everybody. And then in the second half of the season, we really lost our way and got bowled out for some low scores. So, you know, these things happen. It's the test of a team's mental strength, I think, when you go through something like that, how quickly you can come through the other side and turn it around.
Yeah, that's right. And our captain especially spoke about responsibility of each player, which I think is something we need to address. Because there used to be a few good batsmen that used to get the big totals, that used to get us over the line. But when they failed, each and every one of us used to struggle. So we need to get the responsibility section of our team up.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to think about more in terms of partnerships while you're batting and bowling in as a unit and fielding as a unit when you're out in the middle. It's very easy to get sucked into the fact that cricket is, at its heart, one bowler versus one batsman. But if you look at the bigger picture, it's a team game, and you have to play as a team if you're going to perform at your best.
Yeah, that's right. It is a team sport, and if the team gets better and better, the individuals will get better in the team as well. So I think it's just moving forward from here, both as an individual self or as a team as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you finish now for Christmas, or you got another game?
We got a one-dayer coming up this week, which is our last game before the Christmas break. But we're playing the bottom team on the table, so it should sort of be not as hard as the team we played this week, but we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves just yet.
Fingers crossed that you get a bit of a bowl and maybe get some runs if you're called on to bat.
Yes, that's right. Hopefully we'll do something this game, but looking forward to it anyway. How's your week been, David? Been up to anything new?
Well, it's a bit of a quiet period for me in the run-up to Christmas. I just tick along, waiting for the festivities to start. We have put our decorations up now. It's always nice when you've got two small children, as I have, to put the decorations up and get the tree working. And thank goodness, you know, when I got the decorations out of the shed, that the Christmas lights worked first time, because that's always a nightmare if they don't. So I spent about 20 minutes unravelling them and plug them in, and they work first time. So I breathe a sigh of relief there.
Yeah.
In terms of training, I've had to make a few slight changes, because when I planned out my training for this coming period over Christmas, I misjudged how much time the training sessions would take, and they're taking a little bit longer than an hour, which is what I always limit myself to for training. So I've had to cut back on a few different things. So I've put that into my training log, just a couple of different changes that I made. But the main thing really still is the focus on the strength training, and I've not really changed that main focus. That's the most important thing. And I'm also always going on, or one of the main philosophies of the site is that you should really find time to train no matter how much time you've got and what equipment you've got available to you. And I've done that myself with, I've planned in two training sessions in the outdoors at my local park over the Christmas period per week. The reason for is that, the reason for that is that the local park is literally 5 minutes walk up the road. So that's very easy for me. And they've got an old tennis court there, which allows me to do sprint drills and plyometric training and that kind of thing very easily without being disturbed by a lot of people being around. So I do that, and it was a bit slippery in the morning on Tuesday when I went and did it, so I've changed my training to a bit later in the day to get the ice out of the way.
Yeah,
but it's cold, but it's good fun. It's very invigorating when you go out and you train for an hour in the outdoors when it's crisp and cold, and then you get home and you have a shower and you feel good about doing that. So really what I want to take people to take away from that is that you can train pretty much under any circumstances if you put your mind to it. And that's what I've been doing. I'm still going to the gym 3 times a week as well, but I've also added in a couple of outdoor training sessions just to show that it can be done.
Yeah, sounds good. And does the weather permit you to do your outdoor training, or do you do it no matter what, as in rain, hail or shine?
I tend to do it no matter what. I've got one of those obsessive personalities that pretty much whatever the weather, I'm out there. I do have a backup plan in that if it's horrific weather, I've got a gym workout which I can do instead. So
yeah,
I've got a bit of a cheat there, which is a backup plan. But always my first intent is to get outside and train outside, because, you know, you play cricket outside and you don't want to be stuck in the gym. You want to be getting outside as much as you can. We've been lucky with the weather in December. It's rained quite a bit, but the days I've been training have been dry and they've been crisp. So I've been lucky on that. I'm not really looking forward to what it's going to be like in January, February, March, because as I was saying to you before we started recording this, earlier this year, training in late winter, early spring, the weather was absolutely torrential rain, and I even managed to lose a stopwatch. The weather was so bad, so I've been a bit more careful this year.
Yeah, the things you sacrifice for cricket, eh?
Mm. Exactly. That stopwatch must have cost me close on £5.
It's a huge sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, then, let's get into the questions for this week.
Okay.
Welcome to the question section of the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. This first question, David, isn't really a question, but it's something I read on the forums.
Hmm.
And the guy says, I would like to point out that anyone who reaches a decent level of strength in the gym, in brackets, amount of weight lifted, will most likely eventually have injuries. Most strong people will be walking around with some type of niggle. It's just an occupational hazard. Reading that, I was a bit edgy because I tend to disagree. What do you think?
I do disagree, Kevin, actually. Yeah, I disagree very strongly. I think that's a very old-fashioned view of training. It's kind of saying that if you're not training hard, you're not training effectively. So you've got to push yourself right to the limit, and you've got to be sore and aching and right on the edge of what your body can take in order for anything to be effective. And the simple truth is that there's a big difference between hard training and good training. There are times when hard training is good training, but you don't have to train hard to train well all the time. And in fact, if you train hard all the time, then you're dramatically increasing your chance of getting an injury. And one of the things that I always stand by, which was first pointed out to me by a strength coach in America called Michael Boyle, was the first thing you should always do when training is to make sure that you're not doing any harm. You don't want to make the last thing you want to do is make things worse.
So you're saying that the difference between the two trainings is good training is where you're doing it technically correct without hurting yourself, and the bad training, which, as pointed out in this post, which leads to niggles and all sorts of things, is incorrect training that's technically incorrect and can cause harm in the future.
That's certainly one aspect of it, definitely. I mean, you've got to make sure that all the training you do is done as technically correct as possible. In many ways, you've got to think of it as an important skill to know in the gym as the technique that your bowling action is, or that your batting shots are. You know, it's that important, because you've got to get the technique right to make sure you're not getting injured. But also, you've got to do it right. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example of hard training versus good training. Power exercises in the gym, such as the push press, which is you have a dumbbell in your hand, which is up on your shoulder, and you're holding it with a neutral grip, which means your palm is facing towards your chin, and you're holding it with a neutral grip, and you bend your legs slightly as if you're going to jump up in the air, and then you drive up and you drive the weight up with your arm. So that's a power exercise, because you're using you're using the power of your legs to drive the weight up. It's not a shoulder exercise. The shoulder is just following the weight upwards that you're using with your legs. So that's a power exercise. Now, if you did that exercise for hundreds and hundreds of reps, then that would be hard, and you would be out of breath, and you would be exhausted and fatigued, and you'd probably be sore the next day from doing that exercise. But it wouldn't make doing all that wouldn't make you very much more powerful. But if you did that exercise for 3 sets of 5 reps with 2 minutes rest between each set, it'd have to be a suitable weight, of course, then that would increase your power, especially your ability to transfer weight from your legs to your upper body, which is great for bowlers. And that would improve your power dramatically. Yeah. But you wouldn't necessarily feel exhausted at the end of that training session. You'd probably feel like you could go again.
Yeah.
But it's very intensive on your nervous system, rather than being very intensive on your heart and your lungs and your local muscular endurance of your legs and your hips and your shoulders and all the rest of it. So that's hard versus good training.
Yeah. With exhaustion and excessive repetition, David, I've heard that technique phrase when you're exhausted and you do heaps of repetitions or whatever in the gym or in your training. Is that true? I mean, with technique fraying, that could hurt you possibly and lead to injuries and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So most of the time, 95% of the time, you would want to train when you're not fatigued, because as you say, technique can go. So if you're doing a lift that you want to do for, say, 10 repetitions, you get to, say, 7, and you think to yourself, I can really force these last 3 out, but it's going to be a horrible looking mess, then it's probably best to stop at 7 or 8 before everything starts to go wrong, especially with big exercises like a squat, for example, where get something wrong and you can cause yourself some serious damage. So there is that.
That's right.
The other thing is that you train, one of the big reasons to train is you train to prevent injury. So if you're getting injuries, then you must be doing something wrong. And there's a difference between training-related injuries and game-related injuries. I can't see any reason why. This is an idea from another strength coach called Vern Gambetta. I can't see why anyone should get an injury while training.
Yeah.
They just shouldn't, unless they're doing something wrong. You'd never get an injury while training.
Yeah.
And also, good training will reduce the amount of injuries that you get while playing, because it strengthens your muscles, it strengthens your ligaments, you know, it gives you more range of motion and all the other good things, gives you more mobility, gives you more stability. So it will reduce. I mean, nothing will prevent it 100%. If you get a cricket ball in the gob when you're fielding at short mid wicket, then there's no amount of training is gonna stop you having to spit out a few teeth. But if you're sprinting after a ball that's just missed your face, then you're less likely to get a hamstring pull.
Yeah, I can't stress your point enough, David, that training does prevent injuries. I had a lower back injury for I don't know how long. It must be a fast bowler thing, but every time, if I'd leave out my back exercises in my deadlifts or whatever for 2 to 3 weeks, I feel my back injury playing up again because I know it's too weak to withstand my bowling or my action. So I do think that training does strengthen you and help you prevent the injuries.
I agree.
What's your take on these preventative exercises that the personal trainers do, David?
So we're talking about things where they don't look like they're much of an exercise, but they're designed to prevent your body getting injured. Another phrase for it is prehabilitation. It gets a bad rap because a lot of it is done when it's not needed to be done, and it looks a lot like rehab type exercises. So if you think about when you're coming back from an injury, you might be doing sort of very light looking exercises to rehabilitate very weak muscles. And the idea of prehabilitation, which is a horrible word, but you know what I mean, preventative exercise, is that you do those exercises before you've got the injury to try and prevent them in the first place. I think they're absolutely brilliant. They do need to be targeted to the person specifically that they are aimed at. You can't just do a general load of prehabilitation and cross your fingers. But they're really, really good, and they sit in a continuum, if you like, of three different types of exercises. So you've got rehab, which is when you're coming back from injury, preventative exercise, which is before you've got injured, and then you've got the more traditional type of exercise that people are used to, which is that progressive overload type exercise, i.e. you pick a weight, you do it for X number of repetitions, and then next time you try and do a slightly heavier weight, and so on and so forth. Or if you're thinking about it from a conditioning point of view, you run a certain number of sprints, and you each session you increase the number of sprints until you're a little bit fitter. So they definitely fit in, especially as part of a good warm-up. They definitely fit in, and it's very important, especially if someone does have a niggle, someone has a shoulder problem or a back problem or something like that, that they put in those prehabilitation exercises to reduce the chance of you getting an injury in the first place. So it's a balance between having good technique, having good prehabilitation-type exercises, and knowing the difference between a hard workout and a good workout.
So you're saying, is it a good idea to have preventive exercises and progressive overload exercises in one's exercise routine for a week?
Yeah, definitely. The way I would structure it would be to, you have your warm-up, and during your warm-up, you put in the things that will help you. For example, if you are prone to a lower back problem, one of the reasons why that might be happening is that the glute muscles, the big muscle that is your bum, basically, is not doing its job properly. So your lower back is trying to compensate for that. Now, if you let that happen, then that will gradually over time get worse and worse. You might even end up with a stress fracture if you're a fast bowler. So to prevent that from happening in the first place, you can just do a couple of simple exercises like glute bridges, we talked about these on a previous show, where you lie on the floor and you with your feet flat on the ground. You lie on your back with your feet flat on the ground, and you lift your hips up in the air. So you're creating like a triangle shape.
Yeah.
That will activate the glute muscles, get them firing, get them working, remind your body that it's the glute muscles that need to do the work, not the lower back muscles. And then you go into exercises like squats and deadlifts, and that will help your body remember the right way to do it when you're in the middle of your bowling action.
So sort of training your body to work right and prevent all these little niggles that the person has posted about.
Yeah, correct. And if you've got a niggle, you need to work out why you've got that niggle and either cut out some of the exercises that you're doing because they're causing the niggle, cut back on the intensity, look on your technique, or do more preventative exercise. But you can do any of the above. And if you do all of those, or whichever one of those is causing the problem, then that niggle will go away and it won't come back.
Let's get into our next question. This question applies to all of us because we have our Christmas holidays coming up. And Steve has asked for anything he can do during the Christmas holidays to keep himself on track with his training. I'll be interested to hear this, David. And this will be pretty hard as well. I mean, because the diet sort of goes wayward during the Christmas period. And yeah. If the diet goes wayward, the training isn't really that useful anymore. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're listening in the United Kingdom or Australia or South Africa, then you know it applies to you really. Christmas, where the Christmas break is bigger. Not so much if you're listening in the subcontinent, of course, but it still applies to any period where you're having a holiday and you're going outside of your normal way of working. So it's important. We'll talk about it from a Christmas point of view, but you can be applied to any time of the year where things change. The big dangers with Christmas are overeating, so you gain fat, and under-exercising, so you lose the gains that you've been making over the previous months. Put those together, and things are really going wrong. So on one hand, you're losing strength, you're losing speed, you're losing your ability to prevent injury, which we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you're gaining weight, and it's not gaining weight in a good way in terms of lean body mass. It's gaining weight in terms of extra fat. So you end up in January almost back at square one.
And what would you suggest that one does to get through this tough sort of thing period?
Well, I look at it in three ways. I look at it from a nutrition point of view, I look at it from a training point of view, and I look at it from a mental point of view. And I think the mental side of it is really, really important, because the way you approach a period like Christmas is very important mentally. What a lot of people do is they just write off the entire 2, 3, maybe even 4 weeks. They go, well, I know it's all going to go horribly wrong anyway. I might as well just write off the entire period and have a good time and worry about it on January the 2nd or January the 11th or January the 31st, as some people go. So, because it can easily spiral out of control if you're not being careful. But if you take it more of a mental approach as, I'm going to see this as, there's certain times when I'm going to relax and I'm not going to worry about it, but the rest of the time, I'm just going to treat it as a normal day. Because there'll be days in that Christmas period where it's just like a normal day, except maybe you're not at work. Maybe it's just like a normal day off.
Yeah.
So if you're taking it with a mental approach like that, you don't write off the entire period. You take it on a... You actually plan in the days where you know things are going to go wrong, and then the next day you can just get back to where you were in the first place. So obviously a day like Christmas Day, you're going to say, okay, Christmas Day, I'm going to eat what I like, drink what I like, and not worry too much about it. But you don't have to do that on Christmas Eve, and you don't have to do that on Boxing Day. Even if you have a few drinks with some friends on Christmas Eve, which a lot of people do, during the day you can still have a normal day.
Are there any techniques to strengthen yourself mentally and keep yourself prepared for the Christmas period, David?
That's a good question, actually. Yeah, because you can do quite a lot of stuff over the Christmas period in terms of your mental preparation that maybe you don't have time to do during other times of the year. One thing that I talk about a lot on the Pitch Vision site is using visualization and imagery to improve your game. It's a proven technique that you can use to focus your mind on being successful. And I won't go into the exact techniques. If you go on to pitchvision.com and do a search for visualization, you'll get the articles on visualization, and also do a search for imagery, you'll get the articles on imagery. But if you spend 15-20 minutes a day, and over the Christmas period you'll have 15-20 minutes a day to be able to do this, to just sit down and think through your previous successes, and maybe think through what you would like to happen when you start playing again, then that's going to make a big difference to your mental approach when you actually get back out into the middle again.
Yeah, and I guess it adds to the positivity and makes you a lot more guilty for sort of straying off your exercise and your diet, your eating habits and all that.
Yeah, one thing I want to stress is I don't want people to feel guilty. By all means, enjoy yourself, but don't feel guilty about enjoying yourself. Just plan out. You know, you know, roughly speaking, when you're going to go out for a drink with your mates, and you know, roughly speaking, when you're going to have a big meal with the family. You know these things. Just plan them in. Just say to yourself, right, on such and such a day, I will have a few drinks, and I'm not going to beat myself up over it. That's the most important mental approach. Just say to yourself, I know that I will, on such and such a day, do something quote-unquote wrong, but then I know also the next day that I will be back on my schedule, if you like, and be back to normal until the next one. So that'll cut down a lot. Okay. That'll cut down a lot of problems. The second thing I want to talk about is nutrition. Nutrition often goes out the window over Christmas period. It doesn't need to. You can still eat healthily over Christmas. There's three different things that I wanted to point out. I mean, the main one really is that cooking for yourself as much as you can. I mean, home-cooked food over Christmas is brilliant. So the more you can have home-cooked food, the better. When you think of Christmas, you think of turkey and roast potatoes and Brussels sprouts and all that kind of thing. All that kind of thing is nutritionally valuable. It's a valuably nutrition because you've got lots of excellent nutrients in foods like turkey and vegetables and things like that. So brilliant. You know, that's exactly what we're talking about. So eat as much home-cooked food as you can over the period. Don't use it as an excuse to eat out every night. Cook your own food or get someone to cook food for you. That should be pretty easy. Yeah. And the second thing is that it's a good time. I mean, if you're going to be spending a bit of money anyway over Christmas, it's a good time to go organic over the Christmas period. Organic food is much higher in nutrients than non-organic food. So if you're going to be spending money on food anyway, why not go for the organic options? Because that's going to be better for you. Yep. And the third thing I would say is, over Christmas, there's probably three things around that you're going to snack on quite a lot. There's sweets, there's fruit, and there's nuts. Now, I would say fill your boots when it comes to the fruit and the nuts, and try and keep the sweets to a minimum if you can. If you're going to be snacking on something, snacking on nuts and fruit, which is just, I mean, in my opinion, snacking on nuts and fruit is just as nice as going into the sweet tin and having a couple of sweets. You may as well leave the sweet tin and snack on fruit and nuts instead.
Of course, with the diet as well, there should be proper exercise for the week. Someone has planned should be followed as well, don't you reckon?
Yeah. One thing I like to do when it comes to exercise is to try and get something in before a big meal, because that will help the nutrients from that meal get to the right place rather than just being stored as fat. You've got that post-workout effect that we talked about last week on the show, where the nutrients are getting into your muscles and helping your body recover from exercise rather than just you sitting around watching TV and then having a big meal. Your body can't do anything but store all those nutrients as fat. So in terms of training, do what you can. Now, I know it's difficult, especially over the Christmas period where a lot of gyms and places like that are closed. But as we were saying right back at the beginning of the show, just because your gym's closed doesn't mean you can't have a workout. You can do a 30-minute bodyweight training workout at home, in your own garden, down at your local park. Lots of parks have children's play areas. As long as there's no children around, why not use them for your training? I mean, it keeps kids excited. If you know things to climb through and pull themselves up on and clamber over, why don't you get a sweat on doing that? Something is better than nothing, even if it's just for half an hour. The other thing you can do, and I know this from my own experience, is if you can find a way of playing with your kids over the Christmas period rather than them just playing on the PlayStation or just watching telly all the time, if you can get outside with them or even in the house with them playing games and doing lots of different things, being active, that expends a lot of energy. You'd be amazed how tired you can get chasing after a 7-year-old. So it might not feel like you're doing fitness, but you're not really doing fitness, but you're expending energy and you're getting some of those cobwebs brushed away over the Christmas period. And then if you can go to the gym, all the better.
So it's not just one thing, isn't it? It's just a mix of the mental,
yep,
the food element and the fitness element as well that really keeps you in check during the Christmas period.
Yeah, exactly. And don't worry too much if you put on a few pounds over the Christmas period and maybe you go back into the gym and you're not quite as strong as you were. It's all about minimizing the amount of, yep, loss of strength and the amount of gain of fat. It's not about being perfect and holier than thou and never touching the roast potatoes or the puddings or the sweets, because that's not what Christmas is about. Christmas is about having a good time with your friends and your family, and you shouldn't compromise that for anything.
I mean, in terms of exercise, David, what's your take on minimizing the load of exercise during the Christmas period? Say if a cricketer was doing interval sprints for about 20 minutes, if you lowered that down to 10 minutes, say, during the Christmas period, just because it was the Christmas period and he didn't want to do as much, what's your take on that?
I'd say anything's better than nothing would be the first answer. So if you wanted to only do 10 minutes,
yep,
over that period, then why not? At least it's preventing you from sitting around watching television and doing nothing.
Yeah.
If you're out there anyway, I mean, what I tend to find is if someone's out there anyway, they will probably do, yeah, the 20 minutes. Because once you start, the hardest part is starting. But once you've started, you, yeah, think, oh, well, I might as well do the whole workout now.
Yeah.
And one trick that I do, especially if I'm feeling unmotivated, one trick that I do is I'll say, right, all I'm going to do is I'm going to warm up. I'll just warm up. And if I feel, yep, at the end of the warm up, I still don't want to work out, then I'll stop, go and have a shower.
Yeah.
But that tricks your body into starting, your mind into starting. You just, instead of thinking, oh God, I've got to do an hour, you think, I'll just do 10 minutes, 15 yep, minutes of a warm up, and then I'll see how I feel. And then if I don't feel like it, but I've, yep, never, ever, ever done a warm up and then thought, oh, I can't be bothered now. There's something about the warm up, doing the warm up, that makes you think, right, I'm ready, I'm up for it now.
I guess it's just getting your blood moving.
Yeah, something about, you know, I don't know if some kind of chemicals released or something, or it's just psychological. I don't know what it is, but something about just saying to yourself, I'll just warm up, that's only 10 minutes. But then, yeah, when you get to the end of the warm-up, you think, ah, sod it, I'll do it now. And you just do it.
All right, cool. So there's three elements there. Let's get into our next question sent in by our friend Drew.
Hello, Drew.
He's asked, I recently discovered that somehow all my deliveries have started to come out as off-cutters. No matter how much I try to seam or swing the ball, each and every ball I bowl is coming out as an off-cutter. How can I get rid of this habit and get back to bowling swing and seam? Well, the obvious solution, David, is that he's rolling his fingers down the wrong way.
Mm.
Or what if he's intentionally doing that or not, I don't know. But there must be other things he's doing wrong, maybe a technical aspect. What do you reckon?
Yeah, possibly. Before we start this, let me just say that I'm not an expert bowling coach. I do my best, but I'm not the world's greatest expert on bowling actions and things like that, especially when we've really got very little to go on like we have here. I mean, really what we need, Dhruv, is a video of your action to see what's going on there. That, yeah, said, there's a couple of things that are possible, and you've already mentioned one of those, the rolling the fingers down the ball as you let go of it,
yeah,
is a really obvious thing. That's usually, yeah, if he's not doing it deliberately, then I find it hard to think of a way where he would be rolling his fingers down the ball and it's not deliberate. So if it's not deliberate, then, yeah, presumably there's something going wrong with the wrist,
yeah,
rather than the fingers, because it's the wrist which is turning, really, isn't it? You don't twist your fingers, really, do you? Because that'll be an off break then. An off cutter is just,
yeah,
rolling the fingers down the ball with the wrist. So what it sounds like is happening is he's not keeping his wrist behind the seam as he bowls the ball.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, if you hold your hand up as if you're holding a ball now, if you've got a ball nearby, hold the ball in the normal sort of seam up position. If you keep your wrist behind the ball as you move your hand forwards, the seam is going to, and the ball comes out of your fingers straight, the seam is going to have to go straight, isn't it? I mean, there's no there's no way for it to go any other direction apart from stay upright, because your wrist is behind the ball.
Yeah.
It may be that your wrist is soft or your wrist is firm, depending on whether you're bowling in-swingers or out-swingers, but the wrist should always be behind the ball. So if his wrist is just going out to the side a little bit, then his fingers will not be directly behind the seam as he releases it, and it'll come out either as a cutter, or maybe the other thing that he might mean is that it's a scrambled seam. I'm not quite sure whether he means it's an actual cutter or whether it's a scrambled seam. So if it's coming out as a really badly scrambled seam, then that could be the reason.
On TV and during cricket matches, the commentators talk a lot about perfect seam position, and with that they talk about the wrist position as well that comes with the seam position. I guess both of them do go together, don't they?
They do, and if you think, I mean, the wrist is an incredibly flexible joint, so, you know, it can operate almost independently of the rest of the action. So it could well just be a wrist position problem. So what he might want to do is just go back to just flicking the ball with his wrist, just using his wrist to flick the ball, and just do a little bit of practice of flicking the ball, and then maybe build that then back into his action slowly. Do it from a one pace, cut the run up out and do it from one pace, and get that feel for the wrist being in the right position.
Yeah, okay. What about his run up, David? His run up into as he bowls the ball, and the positioning, would that have anything to do with the cutters?
The only other thing I can think of, not so much to do with the run-up, but it's to do with his landing, is the landing of his front foot.
Yeah.
And that it's really to do with hip position, but it's the landing of the front foot that gives it away. If he lands his front foot with his toe pointing down towards fine leg, then he's closed off his action. In other words, his hip has come too far around, because his foot is pointing down towards fine leg. His hips come too far around, and your body will follow your toe, right? So if you naturally point your foot down towards fine leg, then what your body is naturally going to want to do is bowl the ball down towards fine leg, which will be a leg side delivery. So what a lot of people tend to do is if their foot lands pointing towards fine leg, they try and compensate with their upper body. They try and twist their body back around so they can bowl straight again. If that happens, if the hip, so you're almost bowling around your own hip then, because your hip's getting in the way, you close yourself off, you're bowling around your own hip. If that happens, then anything could be happening in the upper body, which is causing him to end up in the wrong position, then the ball can be coming out wrong.
Yeah, and that can lead to injuries as well.
It can do, yeah, because he's twisting, yeah. So, but if we're talking about, we're talking about cutters in this case, or maybe a scrambled seam, then he could be overcompensating with his wrist to compensate for the hip. It's all like, it's like a chain, really, isn't it? Like a chain reaction to compensate for the hip, and that could be causing him to bowl straight, but with a scrambled seam or a cutter type action. So what you probably want to do there is get someone he trusts, a coach or just a buddy who's, you know, who he trusts, or even video himself to see where his foot is pointing at the point of delivery. His front foot is pointing at the point of delivery. If it's pointing towards fine leg, then that might be where the problem is, and he wants to try and open that back out again, so the toe is pointing towards the off stump instead. That's the only other thing I can think of. That's a slight guess on my part. I might be wrong there. But it's the only other thing I can think of apart from wrist position.
That sounds about right, I reckon. Yeah, he's probably going to have to follow all those tips. And I think it's best that he posts a video, asks a coach who really knows his stuff. Because if he does keep bowling and if he does have all these problems, this could lead to injuries and could ruin a really good and talented player, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're listening, Dhruv, then and you've got access to a video, then please do send it in to us, mycoach@pitchvision.com, and we'll have a look and we'll see if we can work it out between us.
Yes. Let's just recap all the questions we've covered. on today.
Yep.
We've covered training and if it's a good or a bad thing, positive or negative, and we decided that it was a positive.
Yep.
And that there are a lot more, it has to be looked at in depth further, and there are different types of exercises like preventive, progressive overload, etc. We also
Yep.
looked at how to keep yourself in check during the Christmas holidays.
Yep.
And there's three aspects to that, which is the mental aspect, the diet, the food eating aspect, and the fitness aspect. And we also looked at Drew's question about the off cutter. And we just, that could be either a positioning or his fingers rolling down the ball problem. Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, this is the last podcast for the season. We will be back bigger and better next year. Please do keep sending in your questions to mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycoach@pitchvision.com. Feel free to access any of the previous podcasts and cricket shows during this break from www.pitchvision.com. Thank you for your time, David, today.
No problem at all, Kevin. And you have a very, very good Christmas, and that extends to anyone who's listening as well.
You as well. Have a great Christmas, guys, and hopefully we'll look forward to talking to you sometime soon. So from Australia, this is Kevin Sampath signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.